Okay, this is the Miami Heat Index Heatcast for October 28th. October 21st, Friday. We're talking about NBA lockout, facts and fiction. And the first myth that we're going to tackle today is the idea of, or the question really, whether the real losers in the NBA lockout will be the local employees and businesses in NBA cities. And to discuss this issue with me is Ethan J. Skolnick from the Palm Beach Post. We've gone back and forth about this a little bit on Twitter, and we have two different takes. So, Ethan, why don't you give your take on it first, and then I'll ask you a couple questions about it.
Well, I don't think we're that far apart, actually. I'm really looking at it two ways. I agree with what I think is your one part of your take, which is that we overstate how much we need for local businesses. I've made that case many times against new arenas and new stadiums because I think, again, that's something that owners pitch to local populace to get in the vote thing. And a lot of it is to say that it will bring a lot of business to an area. And I think that's overstated in almost all cases. So I don't think that pulling the NBA out of that building, particularly when you're going to fill some of those days, is going to hurt the local businesses as much. What I'm speaking about is on a very, very micro individual level. I know a lot of the security people. In particular, obviously, you're talking vendors, ticket makers, and all the rest, but a lot of the security people, when you cover sports in this market, as I have for 15, 16 years, you see these faces at a lot of different buildings. And I just know that every time that I was at the stadium for the Marlins this year, or even when I was up there, after the last couple of weeks, or with the Dolphins game, the security guys are always coming up to me. What's going on? Are they going to get this thing settled? And some of the stories that I've heard from these guys individually do give me an indication that they're going to struggle. I know a couple of the guys, they were telling me that some guys already left town, taking jobs, left lower paying jobs in other places, or that they're trying to essentially get days added to part-time jobs they have away from the stadium because they feel they're going to be losing a good number of home days. So I think it does affect those people. As far as the local businesses, I tend to agree with you that I think that'll be overstated.
Okay, well, it's interesting because that was actually going to be my question for you when you were talking about how some of the local workers have already started to make accommodations. Because my question is going to be, for the Heat last season, we're talking about, 55 home dates, which is, it's a little over 2 months worth of work. And we're talking about, an event with the lockout that everyone knew was coming 2 years ago. So, it seems kind of hard to believe that, people could make accommodations granted, we're in a recession, everyone's on the margins, right? So maybe you don't have that 6 months emergency savings that, all the financial planners tell you should have, but. It still seemed a little tough to believe that they couldn't make up.
Well, I think that's it, though. I think in a normal economy, it wouldn't be that big a deal, honestly, for a lot of these people. And they would be able to find maybe a similar paying job making up those dates. I just think in this economy, everybody is so stretched right on the edge. Or not everybody, but obviously a large portion of the population is. And so when you're losing what you looked at as guaranteed income, places you knew you were going to be, it's not so easy for a lot of these guys when they have another part-time job to say, give me more hours. And a lot of they're stripped at those places too. So I think in a normal economy, this would not be as big a deal to some of these people. But I think in this economy, I'm just telling you what they're telling me. And what they're telling me is that they're finding it hard to find extra work to make up for the work that they're losing. I think it's really the biggest thing. As far as the Heat employees, though, that's a different deal. They were warned that, a year ago when they signed their contract, we just forced them, if they wanted to keep their job, they would have to take pay cuts. Essentially it was, at this point, it's 25%. From July to October, it was 10%. But, a lot of those people, and obviously I know a lot of those people, because they knew what could potentially come. And I'm not talking as much about them. I'm talking about people, vendors, people who are tied to the arenas in some way. But again, I agree with you. I think in normal circumstances, you prepare, you put money aside. It's exactly what the players are talking about now.
Right.
The whole, players, they're he told his players to prepare 2 years ago. I just think on the lower end of the scale in terms of income these days, it's a little bit harder to find that kind of work. And I know, you know, a lot of these people have told me they're going to be in some serious trouble if you know, this thing doesn't end at some point where they can at least make 20 or 30 of these things this year.
Okay. Well, so that I had I want to also invite Alfredo Arteaga from HeatFreak.com in the discussion. Alfredo, how you doing?
Good.
Okay. Another question I had for you was, you know, right now it seems like the NBA is actually doing those, you know, the local employees a disservice by canceling games at 2 week chunks at a time. It seems like if they really wanted to help these people out, they would cancel huge chunks of games so that the arenas could actually start making up those dates with other events. Is that an accurate assessment, or is that all, you know, is that wrong?
You know, I haven't thought of that, but it's not a bad way to look at it. I do think that this drip and draft that we're getting, I think it's very difficult for people to react to that. I mean, I'll just make, you know, sort of an example in my business. I mean, in my business, we've had for business, as you may know, is not so good. So, at every paper that I've been at, and I was at the Sun Sentinel for 8 years before I left there for the Post, it was every 2 months it was some cuts, but this will be the last ones for a while, and then in 3 months, more cuts, but this will be the last ones for a while, and then 3 more months. And what I kind of equate it is like when you go to the airport, and you just, you know, you get to the gate, and they tell you, okay, this mechanical issue will be resolved in an hour, and then there's a weather issue, well, you know, it's going to be another hour, and then crew, you know, has worked too long, so they can't get on the, so we're going to need another crew, but that's going to be another hour. And you just wish, and you're there for 8 hours, and before you end up taking off, you just wish somebody at the beginning of it had said, it's going to be 8 hours, okay?
Right.
This is what it's going to be, all right? Either you have an option. You can take another method of transportation, which I think is what you're talking about, which is you can try to find some other kind of deployment. Or, at the very least, you know what the circumstances are, and in my analogy, you go get something to eat for a little while instead of sitting there at the airport being stuck. And that's what we have in my business, and I think that's what's happening here too. If Stern's going to go every two, which it appears is going to be the direction he's going to take this thing, it does make it tougher for people to kind of move on and understand what the circumstances are. And I think that's why I think you hit on it. I think that's why they're so on edge, because they don't want to commit. Some of them who do have the option, and I'm saying a lot of them are telling you they don't, but some of them who do have the option, they don't want to commit to something else. But if they say they work for CSC security company, they want to make sure they're available for them if there end up being games or concerts or something else along those lines. So I do think that's part of it. And I, you know, even if somebody covering it, I mean, it's not affecting my day-to-day employment. I'm still getting paid, but I'd like to know. Other than in 2 weeks increments, I'd like to book my plane tickets, you know, instead of them going through the roof and then my paper telling me, you know, that, well, we can't, you know, we're not going to pay $1,300 to send you to Boston, okay, so we're not going to send that game. I mean, this is basically putting everybody on hold to a certain degree, and it's affecting people in different ways, but, and obviously I'm not comparing my situation to somebody who's relying on states, you know, to pay bills right now, because, again, I'm still getting paid, I can cover other things, but I'd like to know, and I know a lot of people would like to know, so I just think that this whole situation is just, I understand they got to get a deal done. I get it, right? I've made mistakes. I'm on the players. I take the player's side on this, you know, for the most part. But I just think there's so, to me, everybody is kind of on edge in a situation that I think was preordained, that the owners decided a long time ago to lock everybody out. And this is just a big game. They're waiting until the players crack, or until they feel the players will crack. And in the meantime, I just think there are a lot of other people who are getting hurt to varying degrees. So basically, what I view is people off the pony show right now.
Okay, I agree with that. Alfredo, did you have a question? I'm going to give you a chance to chime in.
No. I don't know if you saw Brian Windhorst's new article on Heat Index, on the Miami Heat Index, about Heat owner pushing for a deal.
No, I didn't see that.
Well, basically, it just rehashing what we were talking about last week, if Mickey Harrison was one of the good guys or one of the bad guys, and it seems that, you know, the big four of Dolan, Buss, Cuban, and Harrison, are trying to get it out there as much as possible that, you know, don't blame me for this thing.
Oh.
And now Harrison's being really proactive and actually, you know, talking to people.
Right. We're gonna get to that. I wanted to wrap up with Ethan before we get to that, though, with the local impact of the lockout. So then two last questions for you, Ethan. One is, so when we see the stories about the local impact on the lockout, and the one thing I expected to see that I haven't is someone talking to an employee that was locked out in 99 and how they had dealt with it. I haven't seen any retrospective.
That's interesting. You're right. You haven't. I don't think anybody's been enterprising enough to do that. And I think the one point that I think you've made, it's not taking a little bit of a different look at this now, and I think you sort of raised this on Twitter by sort of indicating that you think a lot of this is overblown, is I do think there are a lot of assumptions being made by people. I agree with you on that, without really any research. And again, I haven't done the hard macro research on that or talked to people from 99. I'm just getting my information from people who are telling me right now that they are affected or they'll be hurting. Now, maybe as, you know, push comes to shove, they end up other opportunities. Maybe some of them will find better opportunities. Who knows? And we'll look back in a few years and say it wasn't the worst thing for them. But I agree with you that I don't think that the people have really dug in on this. And I think some of that has to do with the fact that I think we're waiting to a degree see what the outcome is. Do they end up canceling games? Do they end up booking a bunch of extra concerts? Do they end up, you know, and still, and it's just hard to know right now because you don't really know when this thing is going to be over. But I think that's a good point. I mean, again, 98-99 was a different time. That's the other thing, too. I mean, you're talking about, it was a much better economy. You were kind of coming. In fact, if you look at 98-99, that was kind of the internet bubble. The economy was rocking pretty good at that point. I mean, the bubble burst, I guess it would have been 99.
Sure.
I don't remember when all my stocks went down.
Right. It burst shortly after that. But
Yeah. So, I think that was the end of the Clinton boom and everything else. I mean, that's pre-9/11. It's pre-Iraq. It's pre a lot of things. So, it's just a different situation. And
right.
It's a situation where people are kind of on the edge and they don't need something pushing them over. And I think that, it's lip service to me when the owners talk about caring about people in those buildings and everything else. I mean, even Nick, who I consider to be kind of one of the good guys in all this, and like afraid of talking about, I mean, Nicky he's in a tough spot. He's caught in the middle here. He wants to play. I mean, why wouldn't he? He doesn't want to lose a year of these guys.
Right.
But at the same time, before the lockout, he's talking about a team that was able to fire a season ticket staff last year because they sold all the tickets and they made so much money. And this whole thing, he's able to hold the season ticket money essentially in escrow.
Right.
All this going on. and then meanwhile, while he's got employees on the basketball side, and I'm not talking to the world, I'm talking about the lower level scouts, who, if you're a scout, your job has not changed. It's the same as it was. Okay, you're still touring around the country. Nothing is different right now, and yet you were making 10% less and now 25% less to do it. So although I think Mickey's one of the good ones, I think in general, this talk about caring about sort of the little person and all this, it's more talk. Action.
I didn't know that about the scouts, because I think that we actually had some conflicting information that we talked about last week. Am I wrong about that, Alfredo? Didn't you have a story about the scouting staff last week?
No, I was told that the scouting budget went forward for the entire year, which is $3 million. So that money is spent.
I'm having trouble hearing you, but you were saying that the scouting budget was the same or cut?
He heard that he was told that the scouting budget was going to be held the same at $3 million, and that money was already spent. So we weren't aware that they actually had cutbacks.
No, they're two different things. I heard that budget was the same, but the actual take-home pay was cut. In other words, I haven't heard anything that Mickey's cutting back on the basketball product. It's just what those people are doing, which, again, hasn't changed. Like you said, the budget, my understanding, is the same. What they're getting, everybody in the whole basketball operation is on basketball side. And I have to check on, as of last week, this side had not been cut. But on the basketball side, everybody from the scouts to the equipment people to the trainers to the coaching staff had taking an across the board 10% cut from July 1st through September 30th, going to 25% on October 1st. And I think the date is April 1st for 50%. Obviously, at that point, there wouldn't have been a season. There's a lockout still going. But so that's a salary cut. But my understanding was that it hasn't necessarily cut the budget. But again, if you're a scout, your job really hasn't. You know, if you're an equipment guy, your job has changed right now, obviously. You would be working right now. But if you're a scout, you're still scouting.
Right. Midnight Man has just tipped off.
That's right. Exactly.
Okay. Well, then one last question I had for you, and it's not lockout related, is listeners of the HeatCast know that I'm not a fan of Ira Winderman. And so, you know, we've created this thing called the Heat Shit List, and he's the only Heat beat writer that's on it. And so my question for you is,
I'm going to believe a fan of this. Okay, go ahead. Keep going.
My question is, what did Mario Chalmers do to Ira Winderman? Do you know?
All right, I'm going to be as diplomatic as I can about this, as I possibly can. Ira tends to, you know, pick a guy. At one point, it was Udonis Haslam years ago, where he would, you know, he would talk about, in fact, Udonis wasn't thrilled with it, but, you know, the fact that he would never win a championship with a 6'9" power forward. So he always tends to pick a guy, and Mario happens to have been the most recent guy. And I will admit, and again, I was part of the team since the beginning, so I'm going to defer to him on a lot of things. I will admit that Mario at times has driven me nuts also as a player, not as a person, but at the same point, and pretty obvious during the playoffs last year, particularly during the finals, that Eric should have gone to him a lot earlier. I mean, for whatever Mario's faults are, there's sins of aggressiveness, not sins of passiveness. And, you know, so I earned a lot of respect for Mario for, you know, the fact that he was willing to step up in those moments last year and actually in ways that a lot of the other rotation players were not. So,
okay.
I'm willing to give him a lot more benefit of the doubt going into the season.
Well said. We agree. And, maybe 2 weeks ago, we gave grades out to all the media members, the people that cover the Heat, and we gave you a B+. So just wanted to pass that on to you.
Well, thank you. All right, I passed. Look, you know what? As long as I pass, it's fine. I was looking for gentleman C or above, so I'll take a B+.
I'm just glad I never ripped them on any of these podcasts.
Well, guys, I appreciate it. And you know, if you ever want me to come out again, I'd be happy.
Will do. Thanks a lot, Ethan.
At some point.
All right, bye-bye. All right, so that was pretty good, Alfredo.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so any thoughts you want to say, anything you want to say about the stuff that Ethan talked about before we get into these NBA lockout facts and fiction?
Well, I didn't hear the first, you know, like 2 minutes.
Right.
But, yeah, I agree with pretty much everything that he said, and he was well-informed. I didn't know about that, about the staff.
Yeah,
that all I'd heard was that the budget was the same, you know?
Right.
And that it was spent. I didn't know the scouts were taking pay cuts.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah. So what happens to that extra money, right?
You know what happens to it.
Yeah, because those $3 million are just sitting there, and people right. are using it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Carnival
just so many pizzas you can order.
Hey, Carnival Cruise Line drinks on Mickey.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing he said that was interesting that I didn't think about was whether or not the lockout will actually impact coverage whenever the season does, if the season does start. You know, like when you see beat writers not going to all the games because it's just not in their budget to buy last-minute tickets to Milwaukee. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Or Portland.
Mm-hmm.
So I had not thought about that.
Although the Heat's a pretty hot story down here, and you know, I can't fathom for the life of me how the Sun Sentinel won't have somebody with the team. You know what I mean?
Right. The Sun Sentinel will. But what about the Palm Beach Post? I mean, as far as I know, Ethan's the only one that covers it for them.
Yeah, Ethan's going to have to watch the games on TV and then comment on them.
You know, or like, for instance, for the Sun Sentinel, maybe it's just Ivory that gets to go and not Shandell.
Right.
You know, I don't know. Because like you said, I mean, the newspaper is a dying business. So mm-hmm. It's not like they're flush with cash, but
yeah, Levitard had the best line ever about the newspaper industry. Who wants somebody to throw yesterday's news on your lawn?
Right, exactly. Yeah. All right, so I wanted to talk about NBA lockout facts and fiction because two reasons. One, there was a great article on SB Nation by Andrew Sharp.
Yeah, I read it.
You read it?
Mm-hmm.
All right, talking about NBA lockout myths. And then I've been having debates on Twitter all afternoon with people about NBA lockout myths. So it seemed like a good marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So we just tackled the first one, which was, you know, the real losers in the lockout are the local employees and businesses. And now let's go into some of the other ones. So you wanted to talk about the owners. So why don't we start there? Because the first myth that Andrew tackled was the owners are willing to partner with the players. And you were talking about how some of the owners that actually own the players that do want to partner with the players are trying to separate themselves from their owners that don't want to partner.
Yeah, that was something that I was going to, although I got beat on this pretty bad, you know. But, you know, your podcast is at 6, and I didn't want to, you know, just go on Twitter with it. But this morning I was talking about it. It's getting around town that a lot of media people are getting, like, these calls from certain owners basically taking no ownership of this thing. You know, basically saying, don't blame us. It's not our fault. We're not like those guys. And on Twitter this morning, I was talking about how it's the first noticeable crack in the owner's facade.
Okay.
You know, to which you responded that they're going to lose anyway.
Right. Well, this is interesting because I did a podcast last weekend with sports economist David Barry, the guy that created the Wins Produce Stat. And I asked him, you know, I ran this, you know, when I said you're going to lose anyway, and I gave you the link to the article stating why, I asked him about that theory on that podcast last week. And he said that the difference between, you know, my argument is that the NBPA is using the same strategy that the Major League Baseball Players Association used, which was that, you know, look, you're going to, you know, they went on strike, but either way, we're going to sue the owners for unfair labor practices, and we're going to win. And once we win, we're going to get an injunction against you to let us play on our terms. That's what the NBPA is basically trying to do.
Right.
And so, I mean, baseball was in a different position. They could strike because they had previously found the owners guilty of collusion, you know, and found, you know, it came out that the owners owed them like an extra $280 million in free agency. So, you know, they could strike and still sue the owners for unfair labor practices.
Do you know who would hear this case?
No. I think it might be the Southern District Judge, but I'm not sure because that's the part I don't understand yet. I'm still trying to get some details on that. It depends on how the NL, I mean, that may be up to the NLRB.
Because that sounds like a sound strategy if you know that your judge is going to be labor friendly.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. I don't know how the NL, because the NLRB has to bring the case. It's not up to, like, the NBPA can't file the case. It has to be filed on their behalf. Like, the NLRB has to file a case against the NBA. So I don't know how the NLRB determines where they're going to file their case. You know, last time it was, you know, Sonia Sotomayor, you know, now the Supreme Court Justice, that was the judge. And
she has a favorable labor record.
Right. So you know, that worked out. But Barry's point was he didn't think it would work for the NBPA because they haven't shown a history of getting the owners to crack on each other.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't exploited the divisions in the ownership. But if, you know, with what you're saying, it seems like we're starting to get to the point where the owners are starting to divide amongst themselves and maybe their house will fall down a little bit.
Yeah, and there was a telling tweet, the revolution may not be televised, but it's definitely going to be tweeted. Okay. It was an interesting hashtag by Mickey Arison this morning when he was talking about, I guess he'll tweet about cruises or whatever, and then he put frustrated. He did that as soon as that story was being circulated this morning about that Winhurst was going to release the story today.
Okay.
So it's interesting timing, you know what I mean?
Right.
I haven't done the investigation, but I'm pretty sure if you look at whoever Mickey Arison is following, maybe, you know, it's a direct tie-in, but,
It's about time he said something, because I think I made the point to you on either, I think it was last week, where I said, you know, if Mickey Arison really was on the player's side, he'd say something. What does he care about getting fined by David Stern? I mean, he's not like he can't afford it. I mean, if anything, well, he can use the money he's taken from the Heat employee contract to pay the fine. I mean, what are we
talking about? Well, I'll tell you what I think, and, you know, I don't have no information on this, but maybe it has something to do with that system deal that they were working on last week, where it was basically going to be a trade-off for system for a deal. And I don't know if you heard about it, the mid-level exemption was going to be cut almost in half.
No, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, well, that was last week. And, you know, my theory is that maybe he was keeping quiet because he was hoping that he could get that deal through. And if he could get that deal through, you know, if the owners, you know, if the players were going to bite on that 50-50 and they got that mid-level exemption cut, you know, it was basically going to be business as usual for Mickey Arison and for the Dolans and the Buses and the Cubans.
Okay.
Yeah. But maybe that was the idea. But now that we have this latest falling out where, you know, it seems like, you know, the owners are trying to make the players seem intransigent. They're playing these little political games saying, you know, like, I thought it was disgraceful what Silver did on NBA TV. Did you see what he did?
It was no more disgraceful than what Stern did in his little solo show the week before. But go
yeah,
ahead.
Of course. But you just had a negotiation, and you're basically telling everybody what the other guy said, and then you're assigning motive to what the other guy said.
Right.
You know. He's
following Stern's lead on that. You know, that's what Stern spent the whole last week doing.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never heard of anything. You know, I've never seen this ever end in a. I've never seen that negotiation get off to the point where it's all acrimony, it's all, you know, it's all, you know, innuendo, it's all accusatory, and then you want a deal.
Right.
You know? So, you know, I can't call you an asshole and then ask you for money. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Which is why I think, it's been acrimony for the last 2 years. I mean, you know, like I said on the last podcast, it was just a year ago. Was it a year ago? Yeah, it was just a year ago when, you know, the owners told Dwayne Wade to go be a fashion model and told LeBron to go play football.
Right.
You know, I mean, we're just a year removed from that. So this has been simmering for a long time. That's why I was always leaning towards the side that they weren't going to have a season. Because for what you just said, you can't have a lack. And Andrew Sharp ended his article on this note. You can't have a lack of respect for someone. And let me get his exact words right. What did he say? When there's no respect, prepare for a long-ass fight.
And I don't think it's respect. I think they have contempt for the players.
I think it's both. I think they have contempt for them and they don't respect them.
Because
I mean, think about it. If you respected an NBA superstar like Dwayne Wade or LeBron James, would you make that comment about Dwayne Wade go be a fashion model?
No, that's a cute little comment. You know, you're talking about a CBA that's upcoming, and you're going to be making comments like that.
Right, and listen, that was said the week leading into, that comment was made during All-Star Weekend, and where they were having, you know, that first bargaining session last season.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was a shot fired during negotiations, so.
They had the cute little leaks, like, you know, I got to say that I wouldn't be surprised if exactly everything that was said in that actually happened. I'm talking about the KG leak. Did you hear about that?
Where KG basically kiboshing the players giving in any more BRI?
Yeah, KG shows up at the negotiation for the first time and just started staring at everybody. And, you know, somebody, I think it was Sadat in the morning, that he was like, you know what, when I was reading that, I started picturing in my head him banging his head against the backboard. You know how he does before games?
Right.
And you know, he dropped like a couple of MF bombs in there at himself.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, you know, they described him as ornery. Right. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that's fine. But, you know, I can understand how, yeah, that's not a good strategy. Look, you know, KG's wrong. But the owners have been doing that for months now.
Exactly. I mean, which is why KG did it. And I'm not sure, I don't know if I buy the whole KG destroyed the progress we were making. I mean, that seems like, you know, that's a good story, but, you know, when you hear other members of the executive committee for the Players Association talk, they say that, you know, it was hard enough for us to convince a majority of the players to agree to settle for 53%. So there's no way we were ever going to go for 50. So, you know, I think they were always going to be that hard line. Maybe they would not have said it the way KG said it, but, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think on that. But you know, we got a lot more myths to get to. So, actually, talking about the 50-50 split was the next one. So, you know, there's the myth that the 50-50 split is fair, and we talked about this on the previous Heatcast, that actually 57% of the BRI for the players is actually a true 50-50 split of all NBA income.
Right.
50-50 of BRI ends up with the players taking around 39% of all basketball income, of all NBA income. So, yeah, there's nothing fair about it.
No, it's not. And their accounting is fuzzy. And,
yes,
you know, how the hell are you going to start, you know, doing all your figures after you take out all your expenses? And your expenses happen to be things that you're paying yourself.
And let's not forget, no taxes.
Exactly. So, you know, it's very similar to the trick that that car dealerships used to do. I don't know if you remember it with the warranty deal.
Oh.
Yeah, where they tell you if you pay for the warranty ahead of time, you know, we won't put it in the loan. But remember, the warranty is like $2,500. But you end up paying taxes on that loan anyway. So on the warranty anyway. So like, let's say you go to the car dealership, you give your down payment, you're going to pay your warranty cash. You're not going to finance it. So you pay the $2,500. Well, guess what? You have a sales tax that's attached to those $2,500 of what you're going to pay on that loan for the next 3 years. Wow. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's a trick where if you actually make all your payments for the 3 years, the finance company is going to make an extra $400, $500, $600 out of the clear blue sky.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, that is a good analogy.
It's an accounting trick, and it's dishonest, but, you know, now, you know, we've already, you know, I'm actually paying that right now on my car. I actually did that. The guy told me, you want to pay for your warranty? I'm like, no, finance that fucking thing too. Because you're going to charge me for the taxes on it anyway.
Right.
You know? But right. It's an accounting trick. It's accepted, but, you know, that's something that you pull. You're not supposed to pull that in a CBA discussion in a negotiation. You know, you're trying to get hard numbers, and these guys are playing accounting tricks.
Well, so I think I expect it to be done in the negotiation. Well, we can question, you know, whether it's fair or not, but I fully expect it to be done, which is why the NBPA has their own economists and their own accountants, and, you know, looking at the NBA's numbers to catch all that nonsense.
Right.
You know, I don't put anything past the NBA in these negotiations. So I don't put anything past the NBPA either, for that matter. So the third myth is players need to recognize it's a different economic climate. And, you know, part of that is, I lump under that, the whole bad contracts hurt the NBA. What are your thoughts on this one?
I think that's complete bullshit. It's like the mob used to always say, you know, that the only things that are recession proof are certain areas of the entertainment business.
Right.
And our thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
Well, professional sports, it's the entertainment business. You're talking about a negligible impact on the economy. I'm talking about negligible. Right. It has to be.
And, well, actually, this is what I didn't talk about this with Ethan, but that's where Ethan and I debate started at. That's actually the part we agreed on, is that, you know, sports have no impact on the local economy. Like, when they go away, when there's a lockout or a strike, the GDP for the local economy, the city's GDP stays the same. The city's sales receipts stay the same. The city's per capita income stays the same. There's no impact. Whatever you spend your money on during sports, whatever you spend your money on for sports, when you don't have that sport, you go spend it on something else.
Yeah, and if you're a real sports junkie and you have no pro sports, you'll go find something. Exactly. Think about it. You know, if you're high school football down here, you got to go see St. Thomas Aquinas play.
Right.
You know what I mean? You want to catch a really good high school football game, you want to go watch, you know, 15 Division I football players, go watch St. Thomas Aquinas.
Right.
Now, naturally, the game's going to be over by 9. What are you going to do after? Are you going to go back home and go to sleep? No, you're going to go to a restaurant. Where are you going to go? You're going to go to a restaurant that's local. You know what I mean? Maybe you hear that there's a really good college prospect and, you know, playing basketball. You go watch him play. You know what I mean? There's still an expenditure there that goes right to the local economy.
Right. And on the bad contract side, you know, look, bad contracts. Look, again, you know, we repeat this. Players get 57% of BRI. It doesn't matter what Gilbert Arenas gets or how much of that 57% goes to Gilbert Arenas and how much of that 57% goes to Rashard Lewis. It's still 57% out of the owners' pockets. And the only people impacted by bad contracts are the players themselves. Because if Gilbert Arenas gets a certain chunk, too much of that 57%, gets more of that 57% than he deserves, another NBA player gets screwed. Typically, it's the rookies who get screwed because they get terrible deals. So, Blake Griffin gets screwed, so Gilbert Arenas can have a $20 million a year contract.
Right.
John Wall gets screwed, so Rashard Lewis can have a $20 million a year contract.
Mm-hmm. And it's still on the fault of, it's still the fault of the owners that they feel that they have to compete and hand out full mid-level exemptions to guys that really don't deserve it.
Right.
You know? And crazy extensions. I remember sitting here last year thinking that we had a shot at Marcus Camby. And Portland went out and gave the guy $20 million for 2 years. And I'm like, oh, I guess I was wrong. I guess we didn't have any shot whatsoever at Marcus Camby.
Right.
You know, did he deserve $20 million for 2 years? No, but that's on the owner. That's actually on Paul Allen, the Terminator, like everybody's calling him today. I don't know if you heard, he went into a meeting, he sat down, and he started staring at everybody.
Yeah, I heard.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other part of that is also when you talk about the owner spending because they feel they need to be competitive, there is a ton of research by sports economists that shows in the NBA, payroll, team's payroll only explains about 12% of how much they win. So the salaries have nothing to do with it. It's just an obsession. It's just entertainment for the fans being obsessed with player salaries. It doesn't, in the larger scheme of things, they do not matter.
Right.
What matters is, do you have Kobe Bryant on your team? Do you have Dwight Howard on your team? Do you have Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, Chris Bosh on your team? That's what matters.
An allocation of assets. I think the Heat have the perfect, I said this last year when it happened, I think that the Heat has the perfect payroll structure. I couldn't draw up a better payroll structure than the Heat.
But they have a perfect payroll structure for them. It's not so good for the players because, you know, the players still end up being underpaid with the way they do it. But, you know, because again,
But under the system that we had, I felt that the Heat had the best payroll structure.
I mean, they made out like bandits. I think, because, you know, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, and LeBron James were underpaid by about $30
million. Right.
You know, based on their production. And then you had a bunch of role players on minimum salary contracts. So James Jones, underpaid. That's why he opted out of his contract.
Mm-hmm. You know,
he was underpaid last year. So, yeah, no, but I agree. So, yeah, Pat Riley and Mickey Harrison made out like bandits with the roster last season. And that takes us to the next myth, myth number four. This is about billionaires versus millionaires. And, you know, Andrew Sharp made the point that, no, this is about millionaires who've already sacrificed $180 million to billionaires who want even more than $180
million. Right.
My thought on this is, an extension of Andrew Sharp's point, is you heard Billy Hunter say last night, the players have made concessions of, Billy Hunter said $200 million, maybe he's rounding off that 180 to 200, whatever. Mm-hmm. The NBA said they lost $300 million, right? And then they announced that the new revenue sharing plan is going to give an extra $150 million to the teams that aren't profitable.
Right.
Sounds to me like the problem is solved. So why don't the owners want to take the deal?
Because certain owners want certain parts of the deal and they don't want others. And then you have certain owners that want every part of the deal in their favor.
Right.
And then you have owners like Dolan, Mickey Arison, and Cuban, and Buss, who basically barged in there and said, hey, trying to cause a stir by saying, wow, we won, let's take this, you know, let's take this 53% for them.
Right.
You know, they're giving up 4.5%, and then let's make these changes to the system, and we're cool.
Right.
And the other owners are not buying it. You know, the other owners want it the whole way.
Right.
You know, and I don't know where it's going to end, but I definitely know where it's going.
All right, let's go to number five, which is actually ties right in. The NBA owners are losing money. All right, here's my issue with this one. Yeah, and there have been a lot of intelligent articles written by statisticians like Nate Silver, sports economists, again, showing, and in Forbes, you know, business writers also saying that, yeah, the NBA's claims of whether or not they're losing money is actually dubious. Forbes said they actually made $200 million. NBA said they lost $300 million. Who's telling the truth? Well, here's one sign that the NBA's lying, in my opinion. So they announced this week that the 76ers ownership, a sale was approved to a group led by Joshua Harris, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what did you read about the first thing that they did after they took over control of the team?
No.
They slashed.
Oh, yeah, they cut season ticket prices in half, right?
Yeah, 9,000 ticket prices were cut in half. And this is a team that the previous owner said lost $15 million. How's that possible?
Exactly. And I'll push it even further. Somehow, on paper, the Heat lost money last year.
Right, exactly.
But they were slated to make $37 million this year.
Right.
Which I think I already told you, is half of what the Lakers were slated to make this year.
And they're slated to make $37 million with 10.5% raises going to LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh.
Exactly. So that's some fuzzy accounting that they did last year. Why? Because we were headed to a CBA negotiation.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, I don't think it's a coincidence that it works out that way.
Me neither.
You know?
All right. But, number six, the lockout is about restoring competitive balance.
That's the biggest pile of crap on the wall.
Right. I'll let you go first.
Okay. Competitive balance. What's competitive balance? Well, it's really built in. In basketball, you have five guys on the court. The opposing team has five guys on the court. He has a coach, he has a bench, he has a staff, training staff. He has support staff, he has scouts. Who wins? The better players. If I have more players than you do in my starting five that are better than yours, I have a better chance of winning. Now, people try to use the NFL as a comparison, like, no, you want to be like the NFL, where a team can go from 1-15 to 11-5 and a division championship like the Dolphins did 1 year. And you could go from 1-15 to the playoffs like Carolina did 1 year. No, the reason that happens in the NFL is where the NFL is more random. You have 53-man rosters. You usually win because, a whole assortment of things that could even include the schedule. You only play 16 games and everybody has a different schedule. So, the NFL is random in how it achieves its competitive balance. In baseball, competitive balance, is what you have in baseball competitive balance. No, you have a certain amount of randomness there too.
Right.
So it's you can keep chasing competitive balance, but it just happens. It's not something you can achieve.
Right. It's based on the nature of your sport. You can't legislate it in. You can't make a rule to grant you competitive balance. It just the only thing that the NBA can do if they want competitive balance, they can actually start getting injecting HGH into newborns so that they or start genetically engineering babies so that they all grow to be 6'8".
Yeah.
And have the athletic ability of LeBron James. That's what they want to. That's what they need to do if they want to bring competitive balance to the NBA.
And let me tell you one thing. Can you imagine, let's say that this actually exists, which it doesn't, especially not in basketball.
Right.
Okay. In baseball, it really doesn't exist, and in football, it exists, but it exists because of the way the sport is. But let's say that we could somehow achieve competitive balance in the NBA. Where the NBA Finals next year could be Charlotte versus
Minnesota,
let's say. Okay, Minnesota made it in as the 8th seed. Charlotte made it in as the 7th seed. Somehow, boom, an upset in the first round, an upset in the second round. All of a sudden, you ended up with that final.
Right.
Okay? The only way you'll be able to achieve that is if you made the NBA the worst product in professional sports. Because you would have to basically put one good player in every single team, and then the teams that have a megastar, there would only be like 9 really big superstars. Okay, the other teams, you have to somehow even them out with somebody from the bench or a second-tier superstar. Can you imagine how bad that basketball would be?
And that's the thing, and it still wouldn't even be enough because there aren't that many stars in the NBA.
No, because somebody's going to end up with John Wall and Chris Bosh, and that's going to be the NBA champion this year. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, if that, there's only the difference between John Wall and Chris Bosh, and there's a big difference between Chris Paul and John Wall.
Right
now, anyway. You know, you know, that gap's going to close as John Wall gets better and Chris Paul gets older. But right now, there's a big gap between those two. You know, with his injury problems last year, John Wall was an average NBA player. Average. He was a little bit better than average, but because he was hurt, he couldn't produce enough, you know, and there's many wins as an above average player. But, you know, that's the problem. Like right now, you know, NBA was doing that, you know, ESPN was doing that stupid NBA rank thing. And, you know, the blogger from Stiletto Jack and Jill, right? Mm-hmm. She's a Lakers fan. And so she said she puts Kobe, even as an older player, he's still in the top 5% of the league. Well, you know, the problem is Kobe in the top 5% means that makes him top 25.
Which he definitely is.
Right, which he's definitely top 25. But there's a big gap between Dwayne Wade, who's top 5, and Kobe at 25.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So even if you have one superstar on all team, it's still not equal because the gap between Kobe and LeBron is tremendous. The gap between Dwayne Wade and Kobe is tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
So
and it would make for, and like I said, it would make for terrible basketball. I'm talking about isolation ball. It would be horrific.
We would be back to what we had in the, you know, early 2000s, late 90s.
Right.
You know, after Jordan retired, that's basically what it would be. When basically everybody was trying to emulate Larry Brown. All right, myth number 7. Well, we actually just covered that. The NBA would be more popular with parody, so we just covered that. It would actually be terrible.
Yeah, it would be horrific. I don't think I'd watch it, you know, because I have a regional, you know, allegiance, but it wouldn't be like it is now.
I'll be honest with you. I didn't watch the NBA that much in those days. I watched it in 2001 when the Sixers were good. Well, I watched it when the Sixers were good because I was an Iverson fan, but I did not watch the 2002 NBA Finals. Because, you know, I don't even know what I know I was working on, but I didn't watch it then because it stunk. I didn't watch the 2003 NBA Finals. And then Dwayne Wade came in, so then I got back into the league again. But, I mean, so, and I'm a diehard, but it was just terrible basketball to me. It was boring.
Yeah.
All right. Now, myth number 8 is you're going to have to carry the weight on this one. The players lack, quote-unquote, intellectual capital. Now,
that was a favorite of mine.
So, I don't read Grantland, and I don't read Bill Simmons. So, this is a reference to a statement he made. So, I need you to explain what this controversy is over his intellectual capital comment.
Well, he basically tried to soften it by, you know, trying to say that, you know, the old, you know, what Barkley said earlier with Levitard this week. Where he said you wouldn't have Dwayne Wade negotiate, you know, you wouldn't have Dwayne Wade negotiate your mortgage on your house. You know what I mean? But you would have him play basketball with you at the local YMCA game. I took it as something different. It's very simple what he's saying. They don't have an intellectual capital. Just to call them a bunch of dumbasses.
Right.
You know, and I understand that, you know, yeah, for the most part, a lot of jocks, you know, yeah, they're dumb. You know, Dan Marino is not a very smart man. But he could sure as hell read a defense, and nobody knew what was going on a football field better than Dan Marino.
Right.
But he's not smart. You know what I mean?
Wait, here's the one thing I was... Go ahead.
Now, you have this old, you know, and then you have the stereotypes, which that's why you could get into the ugliness of it. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, where you have people, you know, label other people as thugs because they may have braids, they may have too many tats. You know what I mean?
Right.
But have a conversation with one of those guys and you see how intelligent, how smart, and how engaging they are. It's different. But he was trying to be all high and mighty, and basically he was trying to play the dumb jock card, and you know, it really came off really, really bad. You know? Okay. If it leads to his career ending, you know, I guess I have one thing less to complain about.
Well, I don't think it's going to do that, just because, I mean, ESPN has done some racist stuff over the years and sexist stuff over the years, and they're still around. And I think the only person that ever got fired for it was, who was the old Mets GM? Steve Phillips.
Yeah.
So, I think he'll be fine.
Although Steve Phillips got fired because he has a sexual harassment issue.
Right.
Which ESPN also has a problem with because they fired Sean Salisbury over that.
Right.
And they fired Harold Reynolds, who, in my opinion, is the best at his job in all sports.
And he says he didn't do anything, but
But I just thought I'd add that. Out of all the jocks that analyze sports, nobody's better than Harold Reynolds at his job.
Interesting. Okay. All right. And so the one thing I would say about the whole intellectual capital thing is, you know, so like when you made the comment that Dan Marino is not that smart of a guy. The one thing I will say is this, though. Dan Marino knows he has something because he knows how to hire the right people, because Dan Marino got plenty of money in the bank and he's got several, you know, clever business deals. And so he knows how to trust the right people. Maybe it was luck. I don't know. But so many players getting robbed, you know, of their playing career money, that didn't happen to Dan Marino. So there's something to that. So, you know, intellectual capital is not just the athlete themselves. You know, they all have advisors. You know, you can't make multi-millions of dollars in this country anyway, in this society, and not have a team of advisors. Because it's too much for one person to handle by themselves, so.
But I think he meant that as something else, because you have to think about the context that he was talking about. You know what I mean? Now, if you want to talk about, you know, dumbass players, yeah, you know, Antoine Walker's pretty stupid. Guy made over $100 million and he's in the poor out.
Yeah, see, so this is the thing I wanted to get into with that also. The problem with this is everybody wants to compare this generation of players to previous generations of players. But Andrew Sharp pointed out in his article, and I pointed out in the article I wrote defending the NBPA strategy too. This is not the same group of players, right? Like the same idiots like Barkley. Like, yeah, I wouldn't trust Charles Barkley to negotiate my mortgage because he's an idiot. He's clearly an idiot. Dwayne Wade is a lot more intelligent than Charles Barkley.
Yes.
Is he a realtor? I don't know. But all I'm saying is there's a different level of intelligence between Charles Barkley and Dwayne Wade. There's a difference. These players have a sense of what they want the NBA to be and what they want their career, what they want to do with their careers in the NBA. Charles Barkley just wanted to play basketball. Antoine Walker just wanted to play basketball. You know, that's not the case for all these players today. And so I think people like Bill Simmons, like, you know, the Dead Basketball Poets Society is stuck in this old model of looking at these athletes, and they're looking at a completely different type of athlete. And they need to acknowledge it.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, myth number 9. All sports are doing this. Just look at the NHL. This one was funny to me because the NHL is going to have a lockout next year. So
that's going to be funny.
You know, I mean, this is the craziest thing to me is the funniest thing about this to me is that the NBA keeps touting the NFL and the NHL, but I believe the NFL players got 52.5% of the revenue.
Right.
And they're in the collective bargaining agreement, and the NBA just turned that down. They only want to take 50.
Yeah.
I don't understand that if you want to be like the NFL. And the NHL, everybody knows the NHL is run by Gary Bettman, who was David Stern's boy. David Stern created Gary Bettman. Gary Bettman came out of David Stern's office. So anything they have in the NHL, these are all ideas that came from David Stern. David Stern created the salary cap in sports. So it's not a surprise about the NHL having this new flex cap system. That's an idea from David Stern.
Yeah, and I'm already sick of hearing the comparisons to the NFL. There are no comparisons, okay? The NFL got themselves, the Players Association got themselves DeMaurice Smith to negotiate for them. Guy was a heavyweight, politically connected. As soon as he came on, I was like, okay, Fred Vincent didn't get the job, Trace Armstrong didn't get the job. Wow, look at the guy that they hired. And I told everybody around me, forget it, man. We're gonna get half of a football season. We're gonna get like 8 games because this guy's gonna dig in. He's gonna go to war. And you know how the NFL is. The NFL doesn't, you know, the NFL's not gonna put up with it. The NFL is really gonna, you know, they're gonna go to war right back. But what ended up happening? The players caved again, and it's just the nature of that sport. You know, it has nothing to do with basketball. It's not like the NBA.
Right.
You know?
And I'm not so sure that the players cave so much. I think there they made concessions for health and safety over dollars. So you got to kind of, I mean, and it's kind of tough to factor that in terms of dollars and cents. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because everybody's complaining about, you know, the changes they got made to practices and OTAs. But, you know, the players got those concessions from the owners in exchange for cash, basically. So, you know, I don't know how you value that. Maybe the players think if they play longer, you know, they'll end up earning the same amount of income as they gave up on an annual basis. Who knows? I don't know.
Yeah, and that's you know, that was the bone that they gave D. Murray Smith to claim victory.
Right.
You know.
Right.
But they still kept their own, you know, their own phony baloney, you know, contract system.
Right. Right. That's true. That's true.
Where every contract is basically year to year.
Right. Right. And not even that, you know, it's not even all of that year was guaranteed. So it's,
I was hearing, and it's everybody. I was hearing how Peyton Manning, they're thinking about how they can get out from under Peyton Manning's contract. Who still has 2 years left on the under contract for, I think, $20 million each year.
There's no love in the NFL. There's no love in the NFL.
No. They get rid of you in an instant.
Yeah, that's what
they no matter who you are.
Yeah, that's what NFL stands for. No fucking love.
Yeah.
All right. Number 10. Davis Thurn is controlling the lockout. This one I actually don't think is a myth. I think this is actually true. What do you think?
Well, I think he wants to win, and I think he promised certain owners a certain deal that is seemingly getting harder and harder to pull off. But I think the people that are controlling this lockout are a handful of intransigent owners who know they have the vote count in their favor.
Well, here's the thing. This is why I think Stern is controlling the lockout, because, you know, Billy Hunter said it in the Players Association press conference, right? He quoted, you know, Ted Leonsis got fined. He got slapped with some heavy fine because he talked about how David Stern gave him an assurance that they were going to have the same system in the NBA that they have in the NHL. So, you know, David Stern made that promise to him. And so the question is not whether, you know, the question, who knows, is it the tail wagging the dog or is the dog wagging the tail? David Stern brought in these new owners. You know what I'm saying? And again, and the owners that came from the NHL, they came from the NHL running the system that David Stern essentially created through Gary Bettman. You know, like, even hear Roger Goodell talk about how, you know, David Stern is the godfather of sports commissioners, that they, you know, they all bow down and seek his counsel. You know what I'm saying? Like, there is nothing going on here that David Stern did not control. This is not out of, like, everybody, it's amazing, like, David Stern has such control over the media that everybody wants to, even when they criticize him, say, oh, if he's doing a bad job, it's not because he's doing a bad job because he let the owners get out of control. These owners aren't out of control. They're acting the way he told them to act because he told them he was going to get them what they wanted or what he thinks they should have.
And it's interesting how he refers to them as my owners.
Exactly. That is exactly the point. That I can't even say it any better than that.
Uh-huh.
All right. Man, we're running out of time here. So I had two more I wanted to get to, but we're just going to talk about one, and then we got to hit the NFL picks. A lockout. This is not one from Andrew Sharp, but this is one of mine. A lockout will kill the popularity of the sport. So a lot of people talk about the apathetic South Florida sports fan, and you actually gave a shout-out on Twitter to a guy from ESPN Radio down there. I think it was 760.
Yeah.
And he was kind of tweeting about that this morning, so... Do you think the lockout is going to kill the popularity of the Miami Heat?
No way. The first day they play a regular season game, that place is going to be packed. There's going to be people trying to buy tickets. The secondary market's going to be flush with tickets at exorbitant prices. The scalpers are going to be out there selling the, you know, nosebleed seats for $100. So nah, there won't be any problems. You know, you would have to be out of business for way too long to kill the sport.
Right. I mean, you'd actually have to, it'd have to be something where, you know, LeBron, Wade, and Bosh leave.
Right.
Because as long as they're there, I mean, that's insane to me that people keep wanting to propagate that myth. And this is another issue or another area where sports economists have done a lot of research, and there's no evidence that the fans don't come back. They always come back. Like, even after the 99 lockout. So there was a lockout in 99. In 98, the Heat attendance in 2000, the year after the lockout, was better than the attendance in 1998, the year before the lockout. So, I mean, they went from being like 17th or 20th in attendance in 98 to being top 15 or top, I think they might even been top 10 in 2000. So, I mean, and that was just 1 year after they missed half a season was gone. So nothing, and that was a team that didn't have three superstars. So, there's one thing NBA fans do. That's watch NBA basketball.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing. Nothing's going to change that.
Yeah, you know, and I think the sales for for League Pass and all that, they'll come right back. That's, you know, you're not going to lose. You're going to lose, like, the very, very casual fan, and then he's going to come right back to it.
Exactly.
You know, it's just going to take a little bit of time.
Exactly. All right, so let's...
Danny Martinez went to St. Thomas Aquinas?
Yeah.
Rich kid.
He's always bragging about him on Twitter.
Yeah, that's a monster football team. I think they can play Division I football.
That's funny. All right. Week 7, NFL picks for the Heat players' favorite teams. All right, for the season, you are 17-9. You went 3-2 last week. You got hit by the Dwayne Wade's Bears, upset Mike Miller's Vikings. Well, not an upset because they were at home. But they did a better job protecting Jay Cutler than you anticipated. And even the Dolphins didn't cover, even with the points.
Nope.
All right, so week 7. Let's start with Udonis Haslam, James Jones, and Eddie House's Dolphins. Get a visit from Tim Tebow and the Denver Broncos.
Okay. Do I have to pick this game?
The Dolphins are favored by 1.
Wow. You know, it's that Jet game was a microcosm of the entire season. How you can go from dominating a good team at home on a Monday night for a quarter and a half, and then completely fall apart on one bad call because I was pass interference on Darrell Revis when he interfered with Marshall.
Okay.
How you could just go from dominating a game, playing well with your backup quarterback and with several injuries to completely falling apart, that suggests to me a team that very easily quits. And they're going to need leads to try to win games this year. Because they seem to just pack it in as soon as they have any type of adversity. You know, the only guy playing last week was Brandon Marshall. Guy had a great game. You know, statistically, he dominated Darrell Revis, although Darrell Revis had 2 interceptions.
Right.
But you got to understand, you know, who his quarterback was.
Right.
So, you know, I think as far as winning the game, yeah, I think this is where they get their first win of 2 this year.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. No respect for the Broncos, huh?
They're terrible, and Tebow's terrible.
I think Tebow is underrated. I think people underrate him because he doesn't play like a conventional quarterback, but I think he moves the chains.
Doesn't play like a conventional quarterback, meaning he can't throw the ball?
Well, he doesn't throw the ball as well. Like, does he throw the ball like Tom Brady? No. Does Tom Brady run like Tim Tebow? No, he doesn't.
Yeah.
So I think Tebow, I mean, to me, it's all about downs. And Tebow, in my opinion, in the short little playing time that he's gotten, Tebow has generated downs in the NFL, first downs in the NFL. So we'll see. I would not be surprised. Oh, actually, I should tell you. So AccuScore has Denver winning that game.
Okay, by how much?
0.8.
By how much?
0.8 points. and their simulations, Denver averages 19.9 points. Miami averages 19.1.
Huh.
It's pretty close.
Wow.
So we'll see.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me, you know, the Dolphins, you know, they find ways to lose. You know, maybe Denver has enough, you know. They are coming off a bye. You know, I just forgot about that, you know. Denver is coming off a bye. That's supposed to be an advantage.
And it's going to be like a home game with the University of Florida celebration they're having.
Exactly. So, yeah, you know what?
Oh.
Hey, you know what? Yeah, but the problem here is if I pick Denver, that means the Dolphins will win and we'll lose out on Andrew Luck. So, let me see if I can stay perfect. I'm picking Miami to win.
So, this is a reverse jinx for the rest of the season?
Yeah, man. We get Andrew Luck. We're made.
Okay. All right. Next up is that's funny. Reverse jinx. Next up is Dwayne Wade's Bears go to Tampa Bay against one of your favorite quarterbacks, Josh Freeman. The Bears are favored by 1 point.
They actually don't go to Tampa Bay. They go to London for this one.
Oh. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, this game's in London. It's going to be the best matchup those guys get since those matchups started.
OK. Okay.
So I really like Tampa Bay. I like the way that they're playing football. But LeGarrette Blount is hurt. I don't know if Ernest Graham is going to be able to do it again. They do have a decent pass rush, but somehow they protected Cutler this last week against a pretty good Viking pass rush. I'll take the Bears this week. And a good one. London's finally going to get a... England's finally going to get a good football game. Good NFL football game.
Okay. All right. Next up, we have Mario Chalmers, Carolina Panthers, get a visit from the Burgundy and Gold from D.C. The Panthers are favored by one.
John Beck might be the worst quarterback to ever play professional football. I saw him play here in Miami when he was down here. He played okay last week, but now this is a showcase game where, you know, Cam Newton has had a pretty decent season. Although, you know, if you buy into a TD and interception ratio, which I think is very, very important, if you look back at TD at touchdown to interception ratio, right, it almost dictates whether you make the playoffs or not. It's obviously that Carolina's not going to make the playoffs, but, you know, you can't, you just watch him. You know, Cam Newton is one of these guys you have to watch to realize how good he is, you know what I mean?
Right.
If you look at his numbers, all you see is a bunch of yards, and then his TD to interception ratio is terrible, and his quarterback rating is terrible. But you got to watch him, and I think this is a game where it's going to be a showcase. I think he's going to put on a show, even though the Redskins have a good defense. Carolina wins this game.
Okay, I think I might have to disagree with you about Tebow, Cam Newton a little bit. I don't think his... I mean, I know he's thrown a lot of pick. You know, he threw three picks last week, and he had that one. I think he had like another four pick game. And was that a four pick game in Green Bay? Or was that another three pick game?
That was another three pick game. He has seven touchdowns, nine picks.
Okay. So yeah. All right. So his turnovers are a little above or a little below average. But I saw this this metric on this blog site called Courtside Analyst. The guy usually analyzes. He's a Milwaukee Bucks fan, but he also does some NFL analysis. So he came up with this measure so that he looked at the quarterback's efficiency, where, you know, so they take into account the number of yards the quarterbacks generate per play, and they also subtract the impact of turnovers. But instead of looking at total yardage, he just looked at the yards through the air. So he basically he took the yak out of it, you know, yards after the catch.
Okay.
And when you look at it that way, Cam Newton's the best quarterback in the league, even when you account for his turnovers.
Right, statistically.
Right, based on efficiency, right. Like yardage through the air per play minus the impact of turnovers. He grades out the best in the league, which is crazy.
Right.
That's
or a flawed system.
The system, well, I'll say this. The system this guy came up with, he really didn't come up with it. He just tweaked an existing system that correlates with wins in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been tested by academics. So I'm just saying, there's something. Cam Newton ain't the problem in Carolina, is all I'm saying.
No, their problem is their defense. They have too many injuries.
Yeah, and I don't remember whether or not those are numbers before or after the Falcon game. So let me also throw out that caveat. He may not be the best after that three interception Falcon game.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but you got Carolina over DC. Next up, we have the Rams go to Dallas to face LeBron James and Chris Bosh's Cowboys. The Cowboys are favored by 13.
This is a game I would bet on. Cowboys cover that. They're talking about Sam Bradford might not even play in this game.
Wow.
That would be an absolute mess. They would have another former Dolphin loser, A.J. Feely, start that game. So... You know, and Dallas' defense has been pretty good this year. You know, not great, but it's been pretty decent against some pretty good offenses, especially that performance against New England.
Right.
So, yeah, they should murder the Rams.
Okay.
The Rams might even have injuries at their best player, Steven Jackson. You know, and yeah. Brandon Lloyd might not even play. They're a mess this week.
I mean, my question about the Rams is, Steven Jackson gets hurt every year.
Mm-hmm.
Why is there no contingency plan? It seems like to me the last 3 years he's been hurt every year.
Because in the NFL you have a salary cap and they allocate money based on the position and they're paying Steven Jackson way too much money. So a good backup is going to run. Look, Ricky Williams went for $2.5 million per season for 2 years. you're paying one guy $9 million a year, you can't allocate $11 million to two positions out of 22. You know what I mean? To one position out of 22. Yeah. You know?
But if you're going to, I mean, you can't have an offense with no playmakers either.
The smart thing is to try to trade him for a bunch of picks and don't invest too much money at running back.
Yeah, fair point. All right, next up we have, this is actually the last game of the week. Green Bay goes to Mike Miller's Minnesota Vikings. The Packers are favored by 9.
And that's too low. First of all, Aaron Rodgers is great in dome stadiums.
Okay.
Indoors, he's almost unbeatable indoors. He's having an insane season. The Packers are getting healthier on defense. They should murder Minnesota. Minnesota's going to have a rookie quarterback start this game in Christian Ponder. And I don't see how he does, you know, anything in this one. It'll be too much. Packers will put up too many points. Christian Ponder throw too many interceptions. Okay. Green Bay should cover.
Okay. AccuScore agrees with you, by the way. All right, so that's it. Those are the 5 games this week for the Miami Heat players' favorite NFL teams. Any closing thoughts you wanted to end?
No, let's see if the four horsemen of the apocalypse can get their way in this thing. Dolan, Bus, Cuban, and Arizona. Although I doubt it, but...
Yeah, why don't we close on that? What's the NBA lockout? Where's the NBA lockout confidence meter at for having a season?
It's at 0. You got these guys now, you know, going through the media to try to say, hey, don't blame me, you know what I mean? Okay. You know, and then you have the intransigent few, and then, you know, they're not getting found out. They're not getting exposed. So, I'd say, you know, they're talking about changing dates already in January, I've heard.
Okay.
So, let's put it at 5, which is, you know, mild. It's... not either hot or cold, but it's definitely not hot.
Wait, 5% confidence?
5. Remember, the meter was 1 to 10.
Oh, that's right.
Or 10 was full-blown confidence.
That's right.
Okay. So we're at 5, which is not that good. If I'll give you an example. After our 5-game losing streak toward the end of the year, it was around 5.1. So.
Right. Okay. Wow. So still some dose of optimism in there.
Well, these guys can't be stupid, you know. They have to have a season, you know. They're not completely going to screw over Dolan, Bus, Cuban, Harrison, you know, everybody else, you know. Come on.
I'm telling you, man, death to optimism. When it comes to the NBA lockout, death to optimism. All right. That is the HeatCast for October 21st. Afraid I'll talk to you next week, man.
All right.